Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN. We are here today to talk about some NFL stuff. Of course, training camp is shockingly, staggeringly, distressingly for those of us who have to cover the league for a living coming up very soon. But of course, we still have a lot to get to, still a lot of offseason stuff to talk about here. And so joining me to talk about the Minnesota Vikings first here on the show and about their, I guess, the next 12 months to come and what's happened over the past few months, given how much they have to do in terms of signing their core to deals, is ESPN's Courtney Cronin. Courtney, how are you?
Hey, Bill. I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. I wanted to bring you on the show because there's a lot of interesting stuff happening in Minnesota. And, of course, the big story earlier this offseason was them adding Kirk Cousins on a three-year deal. And we'll talk about that, I'm sure. But the reason that really this came to mind to me was the Daniel Hunter signing, because now – they've signed two players in recent weeks, Eric Kendricks, their middle linebacker, and then Daniel Hunter, young emerging defensive end, to long-term deals. These are guys who are going to be part of their core for years to come. Let's start with this. I mean, are you surprised that given how much those deals have been for and given how much the Vikings already committed to Kirk Cousins earlier this offseason, the Vikings weren't able to lock up those guys to long-term deals really almost a full year before they hit free agency?
I really wasn't surprised that the way that it has played out so far, the timing of Daniil Hunter's deal is just a little strange because usually this is the dead period for the NFL. As you said, you know, training camp starts for the Vikings when rookies report on July 24th. So I was kind of expecting something to happen a little bit further down the line. But with the way that they've managed the cap and how flexible and creative that front office has had to be after signing Kirk Cousins, the Kendricks deal, the first day of the offseason workouts on April 16th, didn't surprise me at all. He was probably the easiest one to get done just from the, you know, taking the five-year, $50 million deal and what they could then focus their efforts on with, at that time, the remaining four players. He without a doubt was the most valuable linebacker they had last year. He's more versatile than Barr. He plays a different role than Barr. But I think just in terms of, you know, when you take a look at how the league's shifting, where you have running backs catching passes out of the backfield, he was such a huge part in eliminating that factor against the Saints and, you know, against the Falcons. And the list goes on and on. So getting him done first, I think, was, you know, just a priority. Get it out of the way. Move on. We know we're not going to have any issues trying to get him signed. But when it comes to Daniil Hunter, I'm A, surprised by the timing, and B, kind of surprised that the type of deal that he took. It's very much a team-friendly deal. It's going to pay him just over $14 million a year when, you know, there's still all this time between now and training camp, now and when potentially Khalil Mack signs his next big deal with the Raiders. And even, you know, had Daniil waited a little bit longer, you know, several people I had spoken with, just kind of working the numbers a little bit here. I mean, the estimation is that he could have earned, you know, about $4 million more a year. He could have been in that $18 million range. I mean, heck, had you franchise tagged him, you know, the franchise tag for defensive ends next year is going to be somewhere right above $17 million. Originally, I had thought that this was going to be one of those DeMarcus Lawrence situations where he gets tagged and then he can go, you know, quote unquote, break the bank. But you know, he's 23 years old. They get him really he'll be in the beginning of his prime, essentially, when he's 28 years old at the time this contract is up. And you never know. Maybe he just wanted his money right now. He got the $15 million signing bonus, which with $40 million in guarantees total for the contract. So he can spread that out over the first few years and really give himself some cap flexibility. But am I surprised that it was Daniil over Barr first for the second contract? Potentially. But I also see, when you take a look at what this franchise has done with its pass rushers, they really do value guys who play that role in getting to the quarterback, as you saw last year with Everson Griffin, extending him 2 years ahead of time, and now with Daniil Hunter.
All right, Courtney, let's talk about the rest of the Vikings free agents to be in a second. But first, just wanted to talk about SeatGeek. And of course, we do this on every show because SeatGeek is literally my best friend, maybe my only friend in many ways. And that's because no friend's ever bought me tickets for stuff. It's maybe happened once or twice, but they weren't great seats. I didn't get a good deal on it. SeatGeek is my friend because SeatGeek gets tickets from all over the web. They don't just get some tickets from some guy in front of a stadium and say, here, these are your tickets now. I don't know if they're good. SeatGeek gets reliable tickets. They get them from reliable sources, and they rate them. So you know you're getting a good deal. If you want to sit in the first row, if you want to sit in the last row, SeatGeek knows what the prices for those tickets should be and lets you know before you make a purchasing decision. And if you want to use SeatGeek and you haven't used it before, number one, I'm a little disappointed in you. I've been doing ads with SeatGeek for a long time now. You probably should have used it already. But if you haven't, and if you haven't, this is your opportunity to get $20 back on your first SeatGeek purchase. And to do that, you need to go to the SeatGeek app, download it. That's the first step. Don't just look at it. You have to download it. Bring it onto your phone. Go to purchase tickets. And then when you're asked to enter a promo code, enter in my promo code, which is Barnwell. B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L. That's my last name, Barnwell. Enter that in on the SeatGeek app when you make your first purchase and you'll get $20 back. Can't beat that deal. Again, first row, last row, 17th row, 143rd row. Does not matter. SeatGeek has tickets for you. Now back to Courtney and the Minnesota Vikings. All right, Courtney. So we talked about Eric Kendricks and Daniel Hunter. Now, of course, still several players to come. You sort of alluded to that. There's three really young players who are coming up over the next 2 years. Stephon Diggs and Anthony Barr, I believe, this offseason, and then Trey Waynes next year. You add, you know, Sheldon Richardson, who signed here in a one-year deal, is going to be a free agent after this season. Kyle Rudolph, a veteran player, finishing up his second contract, I believe, next year. A lot of players who are going to be valuable pieces, you would assume, of the Vikings over the next several seasons, if they're around, coming up for free agency over the next few years. And you brought up Anthony Barr. It seems like he might be the one who the Vikings might be willing to sacrifice to sign the others. Is that true, or is there someone else on that list you think is more likely to not have a long-term future in Minnesota?
Depends who you talk to. I mean, there's several sources I've talked to who think Diggs will be the odd man out, and then on the flip side, you can see it as Barr being the odd man out. And I think the case with Barr is that they drafted him to be a 4-3 linebacker. That's what he's, you know, that's what he was. That's who he is. They did not draft him to rush the passer, but in terms of the contract negotiations, you might be looking at it and saying, hey, well, you don't have the sack numbers to justify potentially, you know, a $13 million deal, you know, a yearly salary, or, you know, trying to get him in that range. I don't know how much less he's going to go for. Then a $12 million, $13 million, I think a more reasonable number, and I spoke with Jason Fitzgerald over at Over the Cap. I have an article kind of breaking this whole situation down. He's incredibly helpful, kind of crunching those numbers. But one thing that we were talking about it where, you know, the Browns and the Jags have kind of paid a higher price for lesser players who kind of have that similar type role, and, you know, just the way that shifted the market might tell Barr and his representation, hey, we're not going to take any less than $12 or $13 million, but 11-5 is probably the reasonable number here to expect for Barr. You know, a team-friendly deal would put him at about $10 million a year if he really does want to stay here in Minnesota and kind of like Daniel Hunter, just, you know, get it over quickly and just take care of it. And then they would be able to probably have more cap flexibility for this coming years with, you know, Stephon Diggs. But I think, you know, Mike Zimmer loves his defensive guys. This is somebody that he's, you know, really stood on the table for the last few years. I'd be very hard pressed to see them not trying everything they can to keep him here. And then potentially Diggs could be the odd man out. I mean, either way you lose something if you're not able to retain both. But as we heard Rick Spielman say last week, which was the first time I had heard him publicly say, they're actively in talks with both agents to try to keep both players, not just the, hey, yeah, we'll see. I mean, this is our goal. We want to keep both Barr and Diggs. They want to keep the core of their team together. As, you know, my colleague Field Yates pointed out recently, they've got 10 players under contract through 2020. That's your Super Bowl window right there. And if you can get two more in there with Barr and Diggs, you're in a good spot. If you try to keep both of them, you're probably not very active in free agency, which is fine. But it could hurt you in areas like, you know, I don't anticipate Sheldon Richardson will be here next year. He took his deal was very calculated to take the 1 year, $8 million deal, then to go bet on himself. So it could make free agency tricky in that aspect. But hey, if you keep the core of your roster together and you perform like you did last year in a 13-3 season, good things are on the horizon.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good problem to have, certainly, you know, deciding between two young Pro Bowl caliber players. I guess the tough part, though, like you sort of alluded to, is that, you know, at Diggs, assuming he has another year like the year he's had last year, and to some extent the year before, you know, if he plays at that level for another year, we have a sense of, okay, well, this is what wide receivers who produce this much get paid. You know, there's a really sort of simple you know, correlation there. It's you get this many yards, you are this productive over this amount of years, you're going to get this amount of money. With Anthony Barr, I mean, there's just obviously he has a huge impact on the field. No one's saying that, but his numbers aren't really there. This is a guy who had 4 sacks as a rookie and has had 6.5 over the ensuing 3 years, 1 interception over the course of his career in Minnesota during the regular season, no forced fumbles last year after racking up 6 over the previous 3 years. Do you think it's important for him to have not only a successful 2018 season, but maybe a productive 2018 season where he does sort of fill up the stat sheet?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we expect deals to get done with this team just with the way that they've done it in the past, you know, early training camp, middle, you know, beginning of training camp, before training camp. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that there's going to be anything just given the type of players that they're trying to sign and what's going to happen the next few weeks. I wouldn't be surprised if this drags into training camp or even further beyond that. It's interesting because the spring bill, they were playing Barr outside more, and what we were able to see, little bit in OTAs, but more so the 3-day mini camp they had in June. And Rick Spielman's talked about the defensive line rotation. That's something that, you know, Philly obviously had, Jacksonville has it. The Vikings want that as well. So maybe you do play Barr off the edge and send him in to get the quarterback, and maybe that increases his value because it'll certainly increase what he's doing on the field, and maybe that translates to statistics. And if that's the case, if they don't want to really do this right now, if they want to play this thing out, or even if they want to sign Diggs first, because, I mean, I think a lot of people have come to the foregone conclusion that Barr is staying regardless because that's one of Mike Zimmer's core players. Mm-hmm. It might not be, but you still have the franchise tag available. I think that's the best thing you could have possibly done with getting Hunter done. That frees, you know, that, you know, because certainly we're going to do something to try to keep him. Pass rushers are at a premium, so if you didn't sign him now, you definitely would use a franchise tag on him. But maybe that becomes the option for Anthony Barr after this season if he does have, you know, indeed a very productive year.
Mm-hmm. So, obviously, whether they sign Barr, whether they sign Diggs, whether they sign both, I mean, there's a lot of players getting raises over the course of this 1 or 2 year stretch. And they did just sign Kirk Cousins to, I believe, a 3-year...
84 million.
Yeah. A big
all
number.
All fully guaranteed.
Yeah, somewhere in the 80s, which is a big number, a big cap number for sure. So, and there's not really much flexibility in terms of that cap figure that the Vikings can really do in terms of creating space, which you can normally do with a 5 or 6 year quarterback contract. You can create some cap space. You can't really do that with Kirk Cousins' contract. So is there a guy or two on the roster who you think, you know, even if he's a core part of this team right now, might be on the bubble when it comes to the 2019 offseason or even possibly the 2020 offseason just for cap reasons?
In terms of restructuring, they're going to have to do something with Kyle Rudolph's deal next year. He has a $7.6 million cap hit, which, you know, he's going to be 30 years old. He's, you know, getting up there, you know, in his prime right now. But as those years start to get up there even more, I mean, he's been with the Vikings his whole career. I could see that number dropping and then asking him to potentially restructure, because it's a matter now of, you know, trying to create some flexibility, because Kirk does take up, you know, $29 million is his cap hit next year. That's 36, it's almost 37% of the entire offense's, you know, cap, which is huge. You know, beyond that, I mean, you can create space because you're not going to have, you know, you're not going to have guys like Terrence Newman. You're not going to have guys like Brian Robeson more than likely coming back next year. And then Sheldon Richardson would be gone. So there's, you know, freeing up, you know, he has I'm looking at it right here. His cap hit, I mean, he's not even on the roster next year. I mean, as we said, he's got an $8 million salary this year. So that frees up some space. Potentially then, if you were to get rid of, you know, if you were to get rid of Barr, then you're looking around $21 million. You know, if let him walk, you'd be looking around $21 million in cap space. But I do think that they're going to try to keep him. So I think that there's pieces that you can do. I mean, Linville Joseph has a $10.7 million cap hit next year. Everson Griffin, 11.9. Xavier Rhodes, 13.4. And even, you know, Anderson Dejo is probably one that would fall in that category. I mean, the other guys you can try to restructure. You can try to, like, just spread that out, get creative. Guys who I would, and maybe they want to keep them for sure. Anderson Dejo has a $5.5 million cap hit in 2019. I could potentially see them moving on from him. They really don't have the depth at safety that they certainly do at cornerback, and trying to look elsewhere for that, for somebody who's, you know, going to be past 30 and, you know, missed a couple games last season. I mean, there's ways that they can do it. There's cap flexibility so they'd be able to afford the players that they want to, retain for, future years, and potentially even looking at the free agency market after, the 2018 season is up.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is a Vikings team that over the past few years, it's certainly been an up and down run for them. They have had two 10-win seasons in recent years, the Adrian Peterson year a few years ago, being one of them. And then after those two 10-win seasons, it wasn't great. It was 5-10-1 the year after, as Peterson was, I believe, on the exempt list for the entire year or almost the entire season. And then an 8-8 campaign, that was hit by injuries. So, I mean, when it comes to adding Kirk Cousins, when it comes to how the fans are feeling right now about this team, do you think it's a thing where, they're almost sort of tempered about last year's success and a little anxious about what's going to come next? Or do you think adding Cousins and how good that team was last year has everyone excited for a possible Super Bowl run this year?
Well, what I've learned in my very short time in Minnesota, I got here last August to cover the team for my first year, is if you mention the word Super Bowl at any point before February 4th or whatever date the game's actually being played, you will definitely get some pushback. I think this team has been spurned, and this fan base has been spurned for so many years with the four Super Bowl losses and, one game away from it last year and just a true monumental collapse in Philadelphia. I think there is some trepidation with Kirk Cousins just for the fact that people don't really know, is he that much better than Case Keenum? Is he a top 10 quarterback? Is that what you need to get this team to the pinnacle of your sport when you have the number one defense in the NFL? And I think that certainly helps, going through, there's going to be ups and downs. It's not going to be a seamless 12-4 season, book your ticket to Atlanta for, Super Bowl 53. I think there will be some growing pains as Kirk Cousins, continues to process through this new offense and learn this new scheme. And a coach that, a veteran coach I had spoken with earlier this offseason said it's a lot easier when if you're installing a new offense, whether it's, moving on from one coordinator to another, it's a lot easier for just a coordinator stepping in. It's not as easy when you have a coordinator and a quarterback stepping into a new situation when those two, are your king and your queen chess pieces. That's going to make it difficult, because it's more difficult on Cousins than anything else. So there is that sense that, hey, they finally have the missing piece with their quarterback. They paid a lot of money. They obviously believe he can do it. That's, with the Vikings, if you're just looking at the financials. But I still think there is some trepidation that how much better is this guy than Case Keenum? And if you see Keenum having any relative success to what Cousins is having or more, you're going to have folks looking at the situation thinking, hey, maybe they overpaid for a quarterback. Maybe they should have just tagged Keenum or kept him, signed into a, another short-term deal in the off season. But, the market commanded this. This is what you had to do. Guys like Cousins never come available on the free market ever, except for Drew Brees and Peyton Manning, both coming off injury. He's healthy. He's not even 30. He'll be 30 years old this season. I mean, there's certainly the reward here is going to outweigh any sort of risk should he perform to the level the Vikings think he can.
Let me finish with this. Do you think the Super Bowl is the only way we'll be sitting here this time next year and saying, yeah, the Kirk Cousins move was a good thing? Like, what would qualify, you think, as a success to Vikings fans when it comes to Kirk Cousins and adding that contract onto their cap for 2018?
Yeah, I'm just not sure why we have this unrealistic expectation that, hey, you get to the Super Bowl this year, like, or nothing. I mean, this team's Super Bowl window is very small. I agree with that. It could be one season. It could be two. Maybe three would be pushing it. But as I mentioned earlier, they have 10 players under contract through 2020, including Cousins. But anyway, I mean, I think it's very unrealistic to think this offense will not continue to have some ups and downs here. Yes, you have a more solid quarterback playing that role for the Vikings to finally give this franchise some stability at the position. But expecting them to go 10-6, I mean, if they make the play, I mean, making the playoffs is their only goal. Doesn't matter if they're the wild card. Doesn't matter if they're if they win the NFC North. Their schedule is absolutely brutal this year. The NFC North is so much better than it was a year ago, and there's a lot of pieces that have changed elsewhere in the league that they're going to, you know, the Vikings are now the hunted. Mm-hmm. It's going to make their life a lot tougher going forward. So, you know, I would think that, yes, within this range here that you sign Cousins, at some point a Super Bowl has to be within the cards to determine, hey, was this $84 million worth it or was it not? But I don't know if you know, just one season and they expected them to go to the Super Bowl. I just don't feel like that's realistic right now.
Yeah, I mean, this schedule, looking at it right now, you weren't joking.
It's pretty awful.
First 5 weeks, San Francisco at Green Bay, hosting the Bills. Okay, it's a little better, but at the Rams, at the Eagles to start the first 5 weeks of the year.
They're lucky that they have 10 days in between that Thursday night Rams game and Eagles game, because that is a brutal stretch, you know, going coast to coast in 10 days. And on top of that, I mean, look at how good those defenses are. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know what kind of defense the Eagles have, but look at everything, all the moves that the Rams made. I mean, all these defenses that have countered this passing league, really, they made the Vikings face, you know, two of them in the first 5 weeks, and three of them, including, if you're going to include what, you know, Green Bay obviously mm-hmm. knows what they were doing with their first two draft picks. But mm-hmm. the Vikings have to face three of those teams in the first 5 weeks of the season. Not easy.
Yeah, while they're learning a new offense. So it'll be very interesting. A really exciting team. Really fascinating team in a lot of ways when it comes to 2018 and beyond. Courtney Cronin, thanks so much for coming on the show today. Where can people check you out on Twitter or on ESPN.com?
Yeah, my Twitter handle is at Courtney R. Cronin. And then if you go to the Vikings tab on ESPN.com, you can see all my stuff. And then, you know, continue over to the NFL page and see everything we have from all the good people at NFL Nation.
All right. Well, Courtney, thank you so much. We're going to come back with more Bill Barnwell Show here in a moment. All right, back here on the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm still Bill Barnwell. Joining me now to talk about the Oakland Raiders, who have had a quite exciting offseason, in case you haven't noticed. Hiring some people, signing some people, letting some people go. A very interesting set of decisions. And joining me to discuss them and discuss the Raiders offense for 2018 is someone who's extremely qualified to discuss that matter. It's The Athletic's Ted Wynn. Ted, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, Bill?
I'm great. Really happy to have you on. We had you on the Nickel Package earlier this year talking Raiders stuff, and talked about the Raiders' problems on offense at the time, and, well, they ended up continuing to be problems for the entire season, which is why the Oakland coaching staff might not be there anymore. So I wanted to ask you, let's start with this, in terms of, you know, as someone who is a Raiders fan and also a very qualified analyst as well, you know, on with each of those hats, I mean, did you feel like it was appropriate for Jack Del Rio and that staff to be let go and replaced with John Gruden, or was it something where you felt like they deserved more time?
I thought it was appropriate. I mean, first of all, I want to say, you know, I thought Jack Del Rio did an admirable job for the Raiders. Mm-hmm. He took the job when nobody wanted it. Nobody wanted that job when he was hired. He came on. He changed the culture there. He wasn't a strong schematic coach. You know, the defense was constantly a mess, and that was supposed to be his expertise. Mm-hmm. But he did get the team to a winning record and, you know, in the playoffs, and they haven't been in playoffs for a long time before that. His worst mistake was obviously letting Bill Musgrave go for Todd Downing. Mm-hmm. But I thought, you know, he did what he could, and he did his job. He turned around the team a little bit and made it respectable. But I think, you know, for the team to take the next step, another coach needed to come in. So I thought it was appropriate that he was let go.
All right, Ted, I want to ask you about John Gruden and about that coaching staff. But first, I want to talk to you guys about SimpliSafe, because alarm companies aren't necessarily the most consumer-friendly people. In 2017, Better Business Bureau, the BBB, heard more than 5,000 complaints about alarm companies. And put that in context, that's putting them in the top 10% of the most complained about industries. No one's complaining about, you know, lawn care companies. You kind of get what you asked for. With alarm companies, you need to have a great product. And it's clear that that was not out there in 2017. And that's why our partners here at SimpliSafe have really improved their product and really stand out versus the pack when it comes to home alarm companies. They get rid of contracts and hidden fees. They don't have that. You don't have to worry about being stuck with some crazy fee for using your home alarm system on a day-to-day basis. They work hard to work their own customer's business. They're not relying on fine printer tricks. They're working on a good product. And so, you know, you don't have to worry about some crazy thing popping up that you're not expecting. You're getting a good product out of the box, which is, it doesn't happen these days. You shouldn't have to rely on hoping that you're going to get good service. You're going to get such good service, and you know that because they have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, and not just now, but for 10 years running. Those 5,000 complaints, not a lot of them worry about SimpliSafe. I haven't looked over everyone. Maybe SimpliSafe people didn't like the name. I don't know. I like the name. I think SimpliSafe is a good product. It's what home security should be. That's why you're getting the best protection, period. And if you want to learn more, because I've only gotten into the basics here, you should check it out. Go to SimpliSafe.com/Barnwell. My last name, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L. Go to SimpliSafe.com/Barnwell. Learn more about their product. Learn why, out of the box, they are a better solution than anything else you're going to find on the home alarm security market. SimpliSafe.com/Barnwell. Now back with Tedwin. In terms of John Gruden, I mean, you're someone who, of course, I'm sure you've watched him break down quarterbacks on ESPN in the past few years. He's someone who had a lot of success in the league previously in Oakland and in Tampa Bay. I mean, what were the strengths of John Gruden's version of the West Coast offense during his first run in Oakland and Tampa? What did his offenses really do well relative to offenses at the time?
So it's hard for me to say what he did in Tampa Bay. I didn't watch a lot of Gruden in Tampa Bay, but sure. You know, when I was watching him with the Raiders, obviously I was a bit younger at the time. But I did go back and study some of his offense or whatever film I could find of his offense back then.
Sure.
And, it's, you know, you just see that West Coast precision that, you know, Walsh is so famous for. And, I think the Raiders got away from that type of precision, last year and got a little too loose. And, you know, everything is so precise. He did so many things, but they were able to play fast at the same time. I think a lot of that was attributed to having a lot of veterans, a lot of guys that are really football smart, like, you know, Jerry Rice, Tim Brown, Rich Gannon. Mm-hmm. So that was really impressive to see all the multiple things that they could do and still play fast.
So what about his scheme or his concepts or his language, at least from what you've been able to ascertain back from that time with the Raiders or perhaps, you know, even that time with Tampa Bay, what about that might seem anachronistic to the NFL in 2018?
Yeah, so, the West Coast language in general is just really verbose and unnecessarily complicated. But, you know, I think Sean McVay, he's a West Coast principal guy, and he kind of simplified his language a lot last year. And, I can't say too much about what I saw or heard in training camp, but I will say that, you know, I think things have changed, and he's made that language a little simpler. I think that the league in general is kind of moving on to becoming a little more simpler because they're more geared towards moving faster, and I think that comes from the spread principles that are starting to take over NFL, play faster and be less complicated. You know, offenses are a little more player friendly now. And, you know, that's not speaking for all coaches. Obviously there's a bunch of coaches out there that are just in love with adding volume and trying to do as much as they can. Mm-hmm. Aaron Cromer, who is the Rams offensive line coach, and he was assistant under Gruden before, said he had a quote. He said, "We threw the ball 760 times, and we only use 20% of what we have." So you can imagine the volume of what we have. So, you know, one of Gruden's things and part of his DNA is just wanting to do so much. Mm-hmm. So I hope that maybe he's toned that down a little bit. And obviously things are different now with the new CBA rules. You don't have as much practice time. So maybe that has something to do with how things are a little simpler now. And hopefully he could adjust his offense to, you know, becoming a little more simple, a little more player friendly.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, obviously you can't talk a ton about what you saw in training camp, but in terms of, you know, what you've seen Gruden say or, you know, your own thoughts on this matter, I mean, does he strike you as someone who is really flexible in terms of what he's learned over the past 15 years or at least the last 10 years being a commentator and sort of taking, you know, the best of that and really shifting his offense? Or do you think he's someone who at the end of the day is going to be built around, you know, sort of those core concepts we saw from him 15 years ago?
As far as, you know, the language, when we're at camp, I think Gruden even talked about this. So, there was just a ton of focus on audibles. There's audibles, they made audibles nearly on every single play. Oh, wow. Even when the quarterbacks are getting their snaps, they're making audibles, they're making dummy calls. You know, Greg Olsen, the quarterback coach, is over here testing them on giving them fronts and making them call audibles while they're taking snaps. So it's just a lot of that going on. As far as his practices, you can see that it's just like a culmination of things that he's learned throughout his time at ESPN, going to different practices and taking those different procedures and putting it into his practice, like your sand training. there's two screens so that players can see replays of the play that happened before, so they get that instant visual feedback. Mm-hmm. And that's a Harbaugh thing. They have two huddles, one for the first team guys and guys that get in rotation, and they have a second huddle for second and third string guys. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one huddle goes one play, the next huddle goes the next play, so they get more reps that way. And that's a Chip Kelly and Philbin thing that he probably got from watching their practices. Mm-hmm. So I think as far as just taking different things that he's learned throughout the years, I think he's been extremely flexible with that. I think there's part of things that are just part of his DNA that's hard to get out of, that he's going to do, and it's not necessarily a bad thing at the same time.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in terms of the Raiders personnel that they currently have, do you think it's a good fit for what Gruden is likely to want to do on offense, or is it still so sort of up in the air as to what that offense is going to look like week one that it's hard to say at this point?
I think it's hard to say just because we don't know exactly what Gruden wants to do yet. I will say that there were, you know, I did a big study in the Rams, and I wrote a two-part article on the Rams offense. I will say there's a lot of similarities and a lot of the same concepts that I saw mm-hmm. the Rams use that the Raiders are starting to use, and obviously Greg Olsen's there, and he was with the Rams last year, so I think it's there's going to be a lot of similarities with those two offenses.
Yeah, I mean, that certainly makes sense. In terms of, you know, there are a lot of players who had down seasons last year. Amari Cooper comes to mind as really, you know, someone who I think was disappointing, ended up moving into the slot for a bit, had some more success there. But it seems like Todd Downing didn't really seem to be able to get the most out of Amari Cooper. Is that something where you think Gruden is going to be more creative with Amari Cooper, or is it, you know, again, still sort of tough to say?
I think he will be. I think Gruden, I think I don't have the exact quote on me, but he did say that it's one of his jobs to try to get Cooper the ball more, mm-hmm. try to get him involved more. And he, when I was there at camp, he was everywhere. He was in the slot, he was outside. And I asked Amari Cooper if he was going to play in the slot more, and he just said that Gruden's having, you know, the receivers learn every position. So I do think that they're going to move Cooper around with the intent of getting him the ball more. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how he responds.
Yeah. So you were at Raiders activities for The Athletic, and even if you can't get into the specifics of what was going on, are there any players who you saw during camp who really stood out to you and sort of might make a bigger impact than people are thinking right now?
Yeah, I mean, Gary and Conley, the first-round pick from last year, he mm-hmm. looked extremely smooth. He was covering well. He just looked like he's going to be a really good corner. And obviously, it's really early. But his one game he had last year where he did play against the Jets, he looked really good. Mm-hmm. And in training camp, he looked like he's healthy and he looks like he's ready to go. Martavius Bryant looked really good. Obviously, there's a little bit of a situation with him right now, mm-hmm. and nobody really knows what's going on, if he's going to be suspended or not. But he looked really good. He got behind a defense a few times. Nick Swisher, who the Raiders got in a trade for Jihad Ward from the Cowboys, he made a few plays in camp. He was a guy I really liked coming out of North Carolina. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see how he plays. He was in the first team at the end of mini camp. So I think that, you know, he's starting to catch the coach's eye, and he's going to be a bigger part of the offense. And Arden Key looked really good, too. You know, it's early right now, and the offensive linemen don't have pads, so they're a little bit of a disadvantage. But Arden Key just looks like a really, really special athlete coming off the edge.
Yeah, so, I mean, a lot of receiver help there with Martavis Bryant coming from the Steelers. Switzer coming over from the Cowboys. So certainly a lot of depth being added there. And, of course, Jordy Nelson playing a bigger role in that offense as well. So, I mean, again, in terms of not only your fandom, but also then as an analyst, someone who – you know, studies the league. What are your expectations for the Raiders this year? I mean, if we were sitting here at the end of the season and you said, okay, the Raiders were 6-10 or 8-8 or 10-6, I mean, is there a number where you think you would sit here and say, okay, yeah, it's kind of what I would expect? And then maybe a number that you'd say, okay, well, I would be surprised by this, but I think it's within the realm of possibility for the Raiders this season.
So as far as number predictions, it's very hard for me to say, because I'm always going to look a little optimistically as, mm-hmm. as a guy who grew up watching the Raiders. But I think with Gruden's offense, I think it's going to take time to click. Mm-hmm. I think that he's going to try to put a lot of volume in, and, you know, and his playbook is a little similar to Kyle Shanahan's and McVay's. And we remember, you know, how Matt Ryan kind of struggled getting that playbook in the first year. So I think it's going to take some time for Derek Carr to really master his offense and really get the offense going. I think the offense could be good, but I don't think that people should be expecting the Raiders to win shootouts early. Mm-hmm. And the defense just has to be much better. I think there is more talent on the Raiders defense than given credit for. And we saw that when the Raiders switched to Pagano later in the season and the defense was a little more organized. So hopefully they get Gunther's system down and they could kind of carry this team a little bit early on when the offense is kind of just learning things. Obviously, having Khalil Mack there would be a big boost. Mm-hmm. I think it's fair to expect the Raiders to push for the playoffs. I mean, last year they were pushing for a playoff until a little later in the season. Mm-hmm. Kansas City is in a bit of a transition period right now with moving to Patrick Mahomes instead of Alex Smith. Mm-hmm. Denver has Case Keenum, but I think that defense is going to look a lot different without Aqib Talib. They, they're part of their identity is just having those two strong corners on the outside, and we'll see what how their defense is going to look without Talib there. San Diego is a wild card, but they have a really old quarterback in Phillip Rivers, and we know what happens with their injury luck, and they already lost Hunter Henry for the season.
Yeah, for sure.
So I think it's fair to expect the Raiders to push for the playoffs. I think maybe 10 to 11 wins. I think they could push for that. I'm not saying that that's a prediction, but I think they can push for 10 to 11 wins.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting early season schedule. They play the Rams week one. That'll be a really fascinating matchup for you, I'm sure, in a lot of ways. Getting to see, like you said, a team that's really taken a lot of principles and a lot of ideas from the Rams versus the Rams themselves and seeing what the Rams have in store for year two of the Sean McVay era. And then at Denver, like you said, a team in transition. At Miami, then hosting Cleveland first 4 weeks of the year. So, mm-hmm. I mean, two home games against the Rams and Browns, two road games against the Broncos and Dolphins. It's not, I'm not saying it's likely, but it's not crazy to imagine the Raiders getting off to a hot start.
Yeah, sure.
It'd be really interesting. All right, Ted. So, I mean, you're always a pleasure to have on, always a pleasure to, read your stuff. Where can people check out the X's and O's work you're doing, the scheme work you're doing, and the Raiders coverage you're doing?
So I write for The Athletic. You can find my work on The Athletic San Francisco for the Raiders and Niners. I'm covering more teams now, so I write occasional articles for different teams, but it's all on The Athletic. So check that out and subscribe if you haven't subscribed. I'm on Twitter at @FB_film analysis, so you can follow me there as well.
Yeah, great follow. Someone I definitely recommend you check out. Ted Wynn, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on.
All right, thanks so much for listening to us talk about football today. Thanks to Courtney Cronin of ESPN. Thanks to Ted Wynn of The Athletic. We're going to come back next week and talk, I believe, more football. Training camp is on the way. More Bill Barnwell Show coming on.